WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Audience, thank you so much for hanging with us today. This next segment will blow your mind. In 2014, the Silicon Valley startup Theranos was valued at $9 billion. Today, it is worth nothing. The fall of Theranos and the exposure of its CEO, Elizabeth Holmes, as someone willing to put patients' lives at risk, it's a really bizarre story. You have investors, politicians, and journalists. They all fell for her soaring rhetoric about equity in healthcare and her far-reaching goals. Is Elizabeth Holmes a con artist or a person who lost control of her vision and covered it up? The company Theranos, Holmes, and the culture of Silicon Valley are at the center of the new documentary from Academy Award-winning director Alex Gibney titled The Inventor, Out for Blood in Silicon Valley. The film deftly and dramatically narrates the rise and fall of the allegedly revolutionary company that claimed it had developed the science to run more than 200 lab tests with just one drop of blood. Take a look at the trailer.
What do you dream for?
That less people have to say goodbye too soon to people they love.
I had heard about Theranos and Elizabeth Holmes, but you know, her story is so compelling. She was going to herald a revolution in medical treatment in this country.
It was obviously such an incredible story, a woman creating this $9 billion company.
Everyone worshipped the ground she walked on. She could do no wrong. She was the next Steve Jobs.
The idea with the Edison was to stick the lab inside the box.
She wanted Edison devices in every home in America.
This could be the apple of healthcare.
You all are part of something that is going to change our world. What higher purpose is there?
Elizabeth came to me, and she described her idea. It's impossible, physically.
Elizabeth was lying about the accuracy of the blood tests.
It's all a show.
She didn't want anybody to see what was going on in there.
We don't need to explain ourselves to competitive companies.
She aligned herself with very powerful men who succumbed to a certain charm.
She was deceiving investors to the tune of $400 million.
It comes back to fake it until you make it.
There was definitely something going on behind the scenes.
She had bulletproof glass on their windows.
Anything I typed was watched.
It was very scary.
Like, what are they trying to hide?
The mantra in Silicon Valley is move fast, break things.
That's not the way you approach science that's going to be impacting people's lives.
Quite frankly, people can die.
It snowballed into this crazy situation.
In a panic, I went and bought a burner phone. I called the Wall Street Journal.
What is coming out of her mouth is not reality.
She never thought she had any limits. She was going to conquer the world.
This was real lunacy.
Can you tell us a secret?
I don't have many secrets.
In Silicon Valley will premiere on HBO on March 18th, and Alex Gibney is with us. Alex, thanks for being with us.
Great to be here, Allison.
So you may know Alex's work, Enron, Smartest Guides in the Room, Client 9 about Elliot Spitzer, Going Clear about Scientology, and now Theranos. So these are stories which could just be the big headline. These people are liars. These people are scammers. So you as a filmmaker, how do you take it past that obvious headline, especially in this case?
Well, for this one, I was interested really in the psychology of fraud, and I was interested in those questions that you raise, which is, did she set out to pull a scam, or was there something else going on? And I think really it takes you into a world of deception, but also self-deception, And in other words, to be a really good liar, sometimes you have to believe in what you're saying so much so that you feel it's okay to lie. And it takes you to that territory of the end justifies the means. That is to say, if you have a glorious and grand vision, then maybe it's okay to cut a few corners. And you cut a few corners, the next thing you know, you're behind, you need to catch up, you cut a few more corners, and you hide a few more facts until you're really in a lot of trouble. And that's what this is about, because I think in a way that then gets at something more than just the oddball scammer. It gets at issues that we all reckon with when we see people like this, and sometimes it's very mainstream. In fact, you know, in the film, one of the things we do is to look at this device, the Edison, and then we go back and look at the original Thomas Edison, who was in his own way the original fake it till you make it guy. Now, as it happens, he made it. You know, he made the incandescent light bulb, but when he said he had invented it, he hadn't. And he did fake demonstrations. He handed out stock to journalists in order to keep them on side. So it is in its own way this kind of fake it till you make it idea in the mainstream. But when you get an exaggerated case like Elizabeth, you see something that highlights the whole thing for us.
There's sort of an old joke in the news business that the words that no company CEO wants to hear is Mike Wallace on line one, right? You have a reputation too now, Alex Gibney on line one. How did you get people to talk to you? Were you ever able to get to Elizabeth Holmes?
So with Elizabeth, the first thing we did was to reach out to her. My producer, who's on the West Coast and more proximate, sat down with her for a five-hour dinner. She wouldn't agree to be interviewed, and we kept trying over time. But it was interesting in that five-hour dinner, which was, you know, off the record. Nevertheless, the overall notion that she conveyed at the time was that she was the victim, not the perp, which is interesting from a psychological perspective. We tried to talk to her. So the other thing was that at least when we started out, Theranos was very much of a going concern. It had been wounded, but it was still a company. But nobody would talk to us because they were afraid of being sued by the famous litigator David Boyce. David Boyce he represented Al Gore in the famous Dimple Chad case. He went up against Microsoft, but recently, you know, he also represented Harvey Weinstein in ways that went after people who are trying to tell the truth. And I think one of the interesting angles to this story is how a company like Theranos, and there will be others in the future that will come forward, use powerful lawyers and use NDAs to silence whistleblowers in ways that are very destructive.
That's some of the people that you do talk to talk about being followed.
Yes.
Talk about being threatened by people, and not just legally, physically as well.
Correct. I think the Tyler Schultz, who's the grandson of George Schultz, who was one of the whistleblowers, and the woman Erica Chung, you see there very briefly, two very young employees of Theranos who fought back, but they felt in physical fear during the period when they were trying to speak up.
Part of the story is also how media and investors fell for Elizabeth Holmes. She had on her board General Mattis, former Secretaries of State Henry Kissinger, George Soltz, Larry Ellison was an investor. As a storyteller, take yourself back to it, what was so appealing about her narrative to these
Well, her
people?
Narrative, I mean, to begin with, you have this industry, the blood testing industry, which is opaque, it's high-priced, and it's distant, you know, and it involves invasive needles that many people are scared of. So think of the promise of, you know, a single drop of blood, which could test you for 200 different things. You could do it in the comfort of a pharmacy, maybe in the future in your own home. You take control of your own health care. And in theory, this machine could be portable, so it could be on medevacs, it could be on army helicopters in the field. So there was a kind of revolutionary quality to all of that that was very appealing and impressive. And then at the head of the company is a young woman who dropped out of Stanford at the age of 19, who in male-dominated Silicon Valley was suddenly a hugely respected entrepreneur, who was, you know, worth $9 billion. That was a really compelling story.
And a lot of very good journalists wrote long, in-depth articles about Elizabeth. Why was she able to skirt past the fact-checking of all this?
You know, there was fact-checking, and of course, one of the things she did was to lie, and that's one of the things we show in the film. You know, you can fact-check so much, and then if somebody is rapaciously lying to you, it's hard to get around that. But I think also one of the interesting through lines of this story, and part of this story is about storytelling. There's the story that Elizabeth was telling, but then there was the story that a couple of the journalists early on were trying to tell, and they were very invested in telling the story of a hero, or a heroine, I mm-hmm. should say. But because they were so invested, maybe they missed some of the warning signs, and maybe they didn't expect that somebody who seemed to be so high-minded could actually be lying to them straight-faced. That took them by surprise. It was the person who comes in from the outside who had been tipped off that there'd been something going on in Theranos, who then came in with a skepticism rather than wanting to believe the story. And he, John Carreyrou, the reporter for the Wall Street Journal, is the one who began to dig out the fraud.
My guess is Alex Gibney. The name of his film is The Inventor, Out for Blood in Silicon Valley. How much of Elizabeth Holmes' presentation was real? There's been this idea that voice is fake.
Nobody I know, it's been said that it's fake, but even Tyler Schultz, would say he never heard her break out of that voice. So if it was fake, mm-hmm. she was on all the time. But I do think there was a way in which she was on all the time, in the sense that she was kind of the writer, director, and producer and costume designer and makeup artist for her own story, which very much involved the celebrity inventor. And she's the main character in the drama. And, you know, she wears this all-black outfit, black turtlenecks, deep red lipstick, mascara. She has eyes that look to you. Everybody said she never blinked. And so those eyes, which are supposed to be the window of the soul, you sort of peer into them, but you're not getting anything back. But it was a very impressive demonstration. And so she carries herself in a way that is a kind of character of force. Interesting, late in the game when, all these questions were raised and suddenly, you know, Theranos' valuation starts plummeting, there was a mea culpa moment, and she's doing an interview with Maria Shriver, and suddenly black turtlenecks are gone, pale blue blouse, no makeup, and a very small crucifix around her neck, so as if she was dressing for contrition.
She created her own myth.
She did.
In many ways.
I think that's fair to say.
I'm interested in the footage. There's a lot of footage in here that I don't think people have ever seen before. Where'd you get it?
It was leaked to us.
Yeah?
So, interestingly, for a company and a person who wants to be the writer, producer, director of their own movie, their own myth, they were filming their own movie. And they had hired another very well-known Academy Award-winning filmmaker named Errol Morris to do their commercials.
You can still see online if you Google.
You can see online, and we have a number of the outtakes in addition to commercials that were never released. But they were also filming company meetings, sort of a wildly outrageous scene where, you know, they get one test approved by the FDA and they all come dancing in to the office to MC Hammer's "You Can't Touch This." And, you know, some obscenity cheers. They would always say F you to their competitors. Wild stuff from inside the company, which is very much about how the company wanted to present itself. Over time, as we began to get to talk to people, we found people who had hard drives of all of this material, and toward the end of our editing process, we got them to leak it to us. So you can see the fraud from the inside out.
You also have the challenge of explaining some pretty complex science in a way within your storytelling. How did you approach that so that you didn't get too bogged down, but that we, the audience, could understand?
I think the important aspects of this were really just to say that it was about blood testing. It was very complicated, not only because there are various kinds of blood tests, but also there are various kinds of regulators. And indeed, that's one of the things that Elizabeth and Theranos were trying to do, was to find a kind of gray zone between two regulators. One is CMS, the Center for Medicare Services, I believe, and then also the FDA. So it was complicated territory, but at heart was the idea not so much that it was the details of the blood tests, we could pretty persuasively demonstrate that the blood tests were inaccurate. And that was the danger. It was presenting how the fraud escalated from a place where they were in R&D mode for a machine to a moment where when they went live in Walgreens, they were putting the lives of real people at risk.
Who else was complicit in this with Elizabeth Holmes?
I think, you know, in their own way, the members of the board were complicit. There was a man named Channing Robertson who had agreed to kind of be her beard, in effect. Mm-hmm. You know, a well-regarded scientist at Stanford who didn't really kick the tires. And I think that certainly her COO, Sonny Balwani, who has also been indicted, was part of this. And there were a lot of high-level employees. And I think, frankly, also David Boies at Boies Schiller was complicit in the sense that that pressure that they exerted on people who tried to speak up was extreme. In fact, you know, there's a scene in the film where we have a tape recording of Boies Schiller trying to shut down the Wall Street Journal and prevent them from publishing their article.
Something else I think is very interesting about the film is the idea of the culture of Silicon Valley, that fake it till you make it, and that idea of sort of...
Move fast, break things.
Move fast, break things, and also get political.
Yes. Well, I think that may have been where you were taking that question before, and I think that's true. Elizabeth surrounded herself with a lot of high-powered political figures. You can see her on with Bill Clinton and the Clinton Global Initiative. You know, Joe Biden shows up at her factory. You know, she's there with, you know, President Obama. John McCain, she carefully cultivated. She was very savvily cultivating people at the very high levels of the government. And by the way, I think her board was very useful in terms of getting her access to that. When you cultivate people with that much power, sometimes they can bring pressure to bear on day-to-day regulators to back off. And that's an important lesson to learn, I think, about this story.
Is there one scene in the movie that you want people to really pay attention to? One scene you think really is...
I think the story to really pay attention to... HBO showed a little bit of it. It's that moment where... just very innocently, that person says, "Do you have any secrets?" And it's the one moment she pauses. She's off message, and she starts to fumble and fiddle. And I don't have many secrets. You can already tell, you know, that you've opened the door to her unconscious, where the lies are buried. And that's kind of a very interesting scene.
The name of the film is The Inventor, Out for Blood in Silicon Valley. It will premiere March 18th on HBO. Alex Gibney, thank you so much for making time today.
Great, Allison. Thanks very much.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.